you could have dinner with anyone, living or dead, who would you choose?
Kylie Minogue.
Oh. Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, God, I wouldn't have a clue.
I know, straight up. Yeah. Paul Hogan.
Kim Kardashian.
No, no, no.
I'd like to have dinner with Justin Bieber.
What? He's not coming to my house.
No.
I'd have Bob Hawke.
Dave Hughes.
Barry Humphries.
Jimi Hendrix.
People who have made a difference in the world, maybe Nelson Mandela at the dinner table.
I don't know what he's going to say. I'm scared.
If you could have dinner with anyone in the world, who would you choose?
Probably our whole family, like a whole extended family.
Mum and Dad.
Mum and Dad.
Does it have to be a celebrity? Could it be family?
We love it. We talk about how school is. We ask Mum and Dad how their day was.
Family.
Yeah, Mum and Dad.
Family. Yeah. Who would you guys like to have dinner with?
They just want to be with us while they're eating food, which is pretty cool.
They see us above everything. I'm going to get...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bit of a message in it for me.
Yes.
What are we having for dinner?
I love that's actually a commercial for dinner. You know, not like go have dinner, we do that, but like pre-made dinners in Australia. And it's funny that it took a dinner company, a food company, to kind of bring out something that many of us are trying to deal with. And, you know, this morning I want to welcome you, especially if you're a guest with us this morning and you're kind of figuring out Crossbridge or you're kind of new here. I hope that you do find this as a welcoming place. I hope that you walk out of here this morning encouraged and feeling blessed and kind of challenged in your faith a little bit. And this week we are kicking off a four-week series on parenting, trying to find balance when you feel like there's none. And I have to tell you that I am very excited about this series, but I feel extremely underqualified to be talking about something that I just have such a difficult time doing. I'm pretty sure that many of you sitting here today are much better parents than I am. And you're much better at this parenting thing. But as I say that, I recognize that you're probably sitting there thinking the same exact thing. That you're sitting there thinking, well, you do parenting different, Jimmy. I see some of the things you do with your kids. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, I see some of the things you do with your kids. And I know this is true because 2 weeks ago, I had the opportunity to go out with a friend from Crossbridge. And we were at the golf range together. And since it was spring break and 70 degrees 2 weeks ago and like 13 today, you got to take advantage of those days. We were out there, and since it's spring break, I had my kids with me. Now, I have a 7, 8, and 9-year-old, and that's a bold choice to take to the driving range. But we did it, and I thought, you know, priorities, kids at a driving range. And I sat there, and, you know, here I am kind of correcting them as they're ready to run out onto the range, and I'm thinking, if you don't listen, you're either going to get hit by, you know, someone's going to try to hit you, which they're not going to get hit because golfers never hit where they want. So that's easy. I drove that cart. No one hits you. You know, so I knew that they were doing what they shouldn't be doing. And here I am trying to correct them and corral them. I'm trying to adjust their grips so they're right. And I'm trying to get my game on while I'm talking to the guy that I'm with. And he looked at me and he just said, "How do you do that?" I said, "Do what? Not freak out?" He says, "No, I feel like you really discipline your kids well. Like you haven't yelled at them at all or freaked out on them. Like, I wish I could parent more like that." And I looked at him and I said, "Are you kidding me? I see what you do with your kids. I know where you go with your kids. I feel like you're always having fun with them. You're always doing cool things. I wish I could do what you do." And we're looking at each other in this complete mode of comparison, realizing that, you know what, we're different men. We're going to be dads in a different way. But I believe many of us, when it comes to parenting, we so quickly get stuck in the comparison problem. And we start to look at what other people do. We compare it to how we do it. And we start to try to adjust. And we become the parents sometimes that we don't want to be. But even worse, I believe we become the parents that God doesn't want us to be, because he's created us in a certain way. And the reason that I played this video this morning to kind of kick us off is because in the eyes of our kids, whether they say it or they don't, I want to remind you that as a parent, you are the most important and the most valuable person in their life. If you leave today with nothing else on your heart, please understand that you are the most important and most valuable person in your kid's life. I'd even go as far to say that you are essential to their lives, and they desperately need you. I know I need that reminder. And because we can fall into this comparison trap, you know what? We don't need to beat ourselves up any more than, you know, than we already do. I think I'm my worst critic sometimes, and I know that there's some things I do parenting really well, and there's some things I just bomb at. I don't need someone else to show me where I'm bombing. I know. But know that as we talk about parenting this month, no one here is out to tell you how much you stink as a parent. I'm going to make the assumption today that because you're here, I'm going to make the assumption today that because you are a parent, you're trying hard to be a good parent. No one has a kid at any point in their life and decides at that moment, you know what? I really want to mess this kid's life up bad. Like, if I could do anything, I really hope that they grow up to be horrible. Most would not say that. There's this moment when your child is born and you look at them and everything changes, or when you adopt that child or you bring them into your home as a foster parent, and you know that while you're fostering or while you're adopting, they're like your kids and you love them like your kids. There's no different. And you look and you don't think, I want them to fail. No, we want them to succeed, but the problem that many of us are going to have is that they're going to look like us. But I'm going to assume you don't want to be a bad parent. But I'm also going to recognize that there are some areas that we could all use a little refresher. Maybe even an overhaul, because we're nowhere near where we expected we'd be when we started this parenting journey. And we don't have a top 10 steps to becoming parent of the year. If you're looking for that, you could check out the tiny parenting section at Barnes & Noble I took yesterday. The one at the Gloucester County Library, also huge. And my favorite thing is you can dive into all of these books right now. And by the time you finish, your kids are going to be through the stage of the 100 books you just read on that stage, and you're going to start all over. You see, what we have over the next month is a plan to walk you through a biblical perspective on parenting. And if you don't have kids and you're here today, I'm telling you, I just said it to some of the folks in the back before we started our service. I wish my church that I went to when I was growing up did more stuff like this before I became a parent, because it might have helped me in the process of being a parent. I could have been ready for some of this stuff that I had no idea was coming my way. So if you're here and you don't have kids and you're thinking, I'm going to be a parent or I want to be a parent at some point, you're probably in the best position out of all of us to succeed at this parenting thing right now. I'm telling you. Because here's the bottom line for us this morning. Good parenting starts with a good parent. Good parenting starts with a good parent. And before you start jumping into thinking about your own parents and you're like, well, if it starts with them, they were all sorts of messed up, and it comes down, we'll get into that next week, okay? So you don't worry about that one. Check it off. You don't have to go there yet. But for this week, I just simply want to suggest that good parenting starts with a good parent. And so much of parenting today, I believe, is spent fighting with our kids. It's finding faults in them and very rarely looking in the mirror and realizing that sometimes, the issue might not be theirs. It might be ours. Maybe, just maybe, part of our kids' issues is that they have parents with issues. I know this is true in my house. I mean, my wife has tons of issues. I love you. In all serious, I think they get most of their dysfunction from me. But how do we start with us? What can we do to become better parents? This morning, I believe that there are two steps that will reorient us on our journey to find balance in our parenting. And I'd love to pick out a story in the Bible that's like, check out this parenting. Look how awesome they are. But if you've ever read the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, you're going to understand that it is filled with story after story after story of horrible parents. It's really encouraging to read as a parent because you're like, ah, at least I didn't do that yet. Like, that's a good thing. The biblical picture of parenting does not start out great either. In Genesis, we have Adam and we have Eve. They have two kids, Cain and Abel. Let me just set this up. You have two kids. There's nothing else. I mean, there's no one to worry about except for your own two kids. I don't know. I always feel like if I didn't have all the distractions of the sports and the computer classes and the school and the art stuff that my kids want to do and trying to balance what dinners we're going to find and do, if I didn't have all that, this would be way easier. Adam and Eve have Cain and Abel. They have nothing else to worry about. There's four. You figure you got a good shot at excelling in parenting at this point, right? There's just four. It can't be that hard. Well, not so much. Genesis 4:8 tells us, now Cain said to his brother Abel, let's go out to the field. And while they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and he killed him. Now, I might not be the best parent, but I can say that my kids have not killed each other yet. There have been threats, but no one's followed through yet. Adam and Eve, the first parent with only two kids, minimal distractions, they can't figure this out. You know, this wasn't their plan for the ideal family. And in their story, I believe that we're going to see a trend that plagues almost every family through the Bible, and it runs right through up to today. Their relationship with their kids and their relationship with God were in the wrong place. For many families in the Bible, we see that kids are the main priority. And it's funny because I think that it works that way with us today too. And when we look at our lives, especially if you have kids in your house, they tend to take a priority. They run to the top, and we always say we want our kids to be the center of our lives and family is so important. And I'm not saying that it's not. But I'm saying just like Adam and Eve, they're spending tons of their time investing in their kids. And we do the same thing. We build our schedules around who? Our kids. That's what we do. Our focus isn't really on us. You know, we always say what's best for the kids. And then we adjust because most of us, we hate the schedules that we live, if we're being honest. We don't want to run from thing to thing. We hate it. It drives us nuts. I wish we didn't do this. No fun. But we invest tons of time into our kids. And we're just going to kind of draw this around to say, this is our time. And then we've got our relationships with God. And I'll be honest. We've only got so much energy. And when we expend most of it here, there's very little that can come into here. You see, we're wiped. We're drained. We're exhausted. The idea of going to sit and read the Bible or go and pray, I want to go be with God. I don't want to be with God. I want to take a nap. You see, I'm not pointing fingers at anybody this morning. I'm just calling out what I see in our culture as a whole. I'm calling out what we celebrate on Facebook. That we invest so much time in our kids and in what they do. We squeeze in the time that we need. And if you're a single parent, your time is even more limited. If you're married, you're trying to squeeze your time to invest into your marriage, and you can't find that. A date night seems forever and a day away because you got to find babysitters. You don't want to do it. You know what? Don't worry about it. We don't have that time. And then we give our exhaustion, what's left over to God, if we even feel like there's any left. I think we've got this all wrong. And if we want to become more effective, less exhausted parents, the first step to reorienting, to find balance in this journey of parenting is we have to invest in your own relationship with God. Invest in your own relationship with God. If good parenting starts with a good parent, we've got to do some rearranging of our priorities. And I know saying that already frustrates some of you. Or it confuses you. I mean, maybe you're sitting here thinking, Jimmy, don't you understand that the Bible tells us that kids are a gift from God? I mean, we have to treasure those gifts and care for those gifts. They deserve all of our attention and all of our energy. Yeah, I know that Psalm 127:3 tells us that children are a blessing and a gift from the Lord. I love Psalm 127. I love that it says this. I understand that this psalm was written by King Solomon, the wisest of all men. But I also know that this psalm is one of a series that we call the Psalm of Ascent. And it's a series of psalms that each Jewish person would read as they were walking up the steps to the temple to worship. And on each step, they would say a new psalm. And so when they hit the step for Psalm 127, they would proclaim the gift and the goodness of children. They would love it. But then they'd take another step. And on Psalm 128, they would repeat this. Blessed are all those who fear the Lord, who walk in obedience to Him. You will eat the fruit of your labor. Blessings and prosperity will be yours. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine in your house, and your children will be like olive shoots around your table. Yes, this will be the blessing for the man who spends all his time with his kids. This will be the blessing for the mom who gets no sleep. This will be the blessing for the parents who can't stand each other because all their time is invested in their kids. No, this will be the blessing for the man who fears the Lord. You see, the priorities have to change. The relationship that we have with God has to be the more important than the relationship that we have with our kids. And I know that sounds so crazy in our culture. But when we spend that time in our relationship with God, we parent from a different place. You know, Adam and Eve, they jacked this whole situation up with their kids. And at this point, Cain kills Abel. He's dead. And Cain gets cursed. He's embarrassed at the whole situation, so he runs away. Not ideal if you're parents that one's dead and the other's a runaway, okay? Not the best track record. But they rearrange their priorities. I believe that they completely start to invest in their relationship with God, and God blesses them at the end of chapter 4 with another son whose name is Seth. And they do something different here, because this is more of the line and the life that Seth leads. Check out the end. It says this. Seth also had a son, and he named him Enosh. At that time, the people began to call on the name of the Lord. Seth's doing something very different than Cain did, isn't he? He's calling on the name of the Lord. He's seeing something in his mom and his dad that's different. They're teaching him by showing him, by doing in front of him. You know, I have to wonder if they stopped and they said, you know, we need to reprioritize this. And what's funny is as the diagram changes, the more time that we invest in God, the more He invests in us. And when we are in this position, we're not giving leftovers to our kid. This inverses, and we actually have more to give to our kids because we're not constantly ticked off at them. We're not always graded by the little things that they do. The beauty of this is we become the center here, because God's investing in us, and we then get to invest into our kids with a different level of intensity. I don't think that this means that they didn't care about Seth, or that your entire day should be spent locked away in a quiet place being with God, because your kids will find you. They always do. I'm in the bathroom, and you see the little fingers underneath. Please. They'll find you. Parents, listen, you can't give something you haven't experienced. You can't fully love your children unless you have experienced the love of God yourself. It's the bottom line. You can't love to the peak of its ability if you have not been loved. And we cannot experience God's love if we're not in a constant relationship with Him. The more we focus on Him and we are intentional about that relationship, the better off our kids will be. We'll focus on Him more. We'll be more loving. We'll be more patient. We'll be more forgiving. Why? Because when we spend time with God, who all over the Bible is referred to as our Father, there's a relationship dynamic that we start to understand what it means to be loved. what it means to have a patient father when many haven't experienced that. A father who disciplines with love and correction when many have not experienced that. A healthy father figure. A healthy parent. When we spend time with him, we become healthier for our kids. I know this is true for me. I know this is true. I am a much better dad when I've spent time with Jesus. Even if it's 5 minutes before my kids get up, or they get off the bus, or right before bedtimes, those are hot trigger times in my house when I'm about to lose it. I can easily fly off the handle. I do and say stupid things in those moments. Those are my big ones. But when I am intentional about taking just 5 minutes to stop and reorient myself to God, I'm much more patient. I'm much more forgiving. I don't say no just to say no all the time. I actually listen to my kids and listen to their heart. Because I say no just to say no. I do this. It benefits my kids. Even though it's more for me and my time with God, my kids feel that. God, our Father in heaven, wants us to keep him as the priority in our life. And if good parenting starts with a good parent, being a good parent, it starts with investing in our relationship with God. And when we invest in our relationship with God, it leads us right into the second step that we need to take for reorienting for the best parenting. And we're going to hit this quick because many of you know it, and it seems like it's common sense. But if you want to find balance in your parenting, the second step is walk in the authority that God's given you. Walk in the authority that God's given you. Now, authority in our culture has been greatly devalued, and we've seen many people in leadership abuse the power that they have. It leaves us with a sense of distrust and resentment. So we find ourselves in a position where we don't like being under authority, but we also know that authority comes with different expectations. So while we don't want to be under authority, many people don't want to be in authority. They don't want to be in authority because then they know they get critiqued. It's a responsibility that we don't want because we're afraid that we might let other people down. And it's safer when someone else is in charge and I can just critique that and not take on that responsibility myself. And unfortunately, this cultural shift in leadership has worked its way into our families. In 20 years of working with teenagers and their parents, I can honestly say that the issue lying right behind neglecting people's own relationship with God is this. Many parents have given up the God-given authority that they have in their family. There is a constant wrestling match with how we assert our authority in our family. I mean, are we in charge because we're older and we're smarter and we have more experience? Can we just tell our kids to do what we want them to do because we're in charge? That'd be nice. But that's not the way it works. That's not God's plan for us. That's not the way that God designed the role of a parent. And we get a sense of this, God's authoritative call for the parent. In the story of Abraham, and in Genesis 18, he is talking and referring to Abraham. And this is God's call for Abraham and how to parent. He says this, "For I have chosen him, Abraham, so that he will direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just, so that the Lord will bring about for Abraham what he has promised him." I love this verse because first off, God chose Abraham to be a parent. You need to hear that you've been chosen to be a parent. If you're here this morning and you have a child, that is not a mistake. It may not have happened the way that you've planned it, but it is not a mistake. God has chosen you to be a parent. And like God's call to Abraham, direct his children. This is it. Direct your children and your household in the way of the Lord. His call is to teach his kids who God is. Let me be as clear as possible with this. You cannot teach what you don't know. That's why our first priority is refocusing our own relationship with God, because then it works it our way into teaching our kids about that. How? Well, the same way that Abraham did, by doing what is right and just. Our personal time with God will transform how we live, and our kids will see that. The Apostle Paul even says something similar in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, where he says, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and the instruction of the Lord." And that fathers could also be mothers there, so we're just going to say parents. Do not exasperate your children. Don't intentionally try to tick them off. I do that. I frustrate my kids. That's not what I'm supposed to be doing. My job as a parent is to be training them, to be instructing them in the ways of the Lord, because they're going to get so much more out of that when they're 20, 30, and 40 and parenting themselves than remembering, "Man, Dad was a jerk when I didn't eat my vegetables. Dad always yelled at me about leaving the lights on constantly because I pays the bills." I hate when they do that. They're going to get more out of, "You know what, guys? God's called me to be responsible to parent you, to teach you. If we're going to respect the earth that God's given us, shut the lights off. It saves energy and money." You know, I mean, I have to teach them ways that they're going to understand, because I said so, while I love that, doesn't always work. Parents, our job is not to frustrate our kids, but instead be intentional about bringing them up in the training and the instruction of the Lord. Understand that God's command from Scripture is that we lead our families. We have an authority given to us by God. We've been entrusted with these amazing little gifts that continue to grow, continue to mature. And our job is not to sit back and watch. Our job is not to just hope that they end up okay. But we are to actively participate and shape and train and instruct them. And when we lead our households from a place of love and respect, not dominance and making it happen because we said so, but from love and respect, and we lead because that's what we've received from God ourselves, our kids will thrive. They will thrive. They need a solid, firm, and confident parent, not one that they can push over and that they can manipulate. That is not God's plan. I was convicted of this many years ago when one of my kids came into my office, and they were young and they weren't listening to me. And it was kind of embarrassing in front of everybody, to be honest with you. And so I did discipline my way. And you know when you do the parent countdown? You have till the count of, what is it? Three. I don't know why we picked three, but you have till the count of three to listen to me. And I said, 1, 2, 2 1/4. 2 1/2, and you give the stress on the half, and you turn your head, and then, you know, they listened. They did what I asked them to do, and I was like, "Ha ha, see, they listened. I'm a good parent." And my family left the office, and another much more seasoned parent came over to me, and he said, "Tell me about that. What was that?" I said, "It's listening, kids." And he says, "Not really." It's like, "What do you mean? They totally did what I asked." He said, "But you gave them time." He says, "You counted to three. Why do you count to three?" I said, "Because it works." He says, "But they didn't listen to you on one. Why do you give them time to listen to you? Are you not an authority? Who's the authority in your house, them or you?" I had never felt more convicted in parenting in my life. And I stand here today not as a three parent anymore. I stand as a one parent. When I say something, I expect my kids to listen. Why? Not because I'm a jerk and because I say so, but because God has given me authority to be the parent of my household, and my job is not to train kids who can manipulate the people around them. My job is to create kids and to parent kids, to train kids, to instruct kids who fear the Lord, and they need to fear me as a dad because I fear my Father in heaven, and I have a relationship with Him that I can trust Him, and I can trust Him because He's always in control. He doesn't bend for my willy-nilly. "Well, God, what about?" And we need to do the same thing for our kids. We walk in an authority that God has given us, not waiting for them to listen, not waiting for them to respond, not letting them dictate what they're going to do, but we do it because we do know what's best. And we know what's best because we've spent that time with God ourselves. We hear from Him, we trust Him, and we parent our kids. So where are you this morning in your parenting? please don't go and try to lead your family from a place of authority if you have not spent that time with God alone, because you will become a dictator and your kids will be frustrated with you. Be intentional to find that balance in parenting where you are first prioritizing your relationship with God, and then second, leading with the authority that God has given you. That's where we are when we start our parenting series. I work on these things daily, telling you that I fail at them often. But when they're in the right order, I'm a much better parent. I'm a much better husband. It makes a difference in the way that we live life. It's not easy. But I do dream about a day when Crossbridge is filled with people, filled with parents who look out and the trajectory of their kids is different than everybody else around them. The comparison game doesn't have to happen because we see a health in our kids, because there's a health in us. Things are right with God and us and our kids. They will not be okay. They will excel at the life that they have because they will see us doing it. And they will follow suit. Remember this week as you sit at dinner, your kids want to be with you. They really do. Don't waste that time. Will you pray with me as our worship team comes back up to close us out? God, I thank you that you are in control of all things. I thank you that there's not one person here who, as a parent, is here by mistake. God, I am thankful that this is a tough job, and I feel like through that process I become to look more like you, because I have to be more patient. I have to be more forgiving. I have to deal with these little beings who drive me nuts sometimes, but at the same time I experience such love through that relationship that I know it's the same between you and I. And I pray, God, a blessing of release over every parent who is in here today, that they would understand how to love their kids better because they've been with you. You've given so freely to us. And I pray that we would experience that. God, as we continue to sing to you and praise you, I pray that you would enjoy it. That, like when our kids sing us a song and we just kind of smile, and whether it's out of tune or in tune, you just grin. Because you love it. We love them and you love us. So I pray that as we sing, you would receive that. I pray that at this time as we give back to you in gifts and offerings, that you would receive that as well. And it seems so feeble in comparison to all that you have, but it's like that gift we give to you to say thank you, knowing that you receive it. God, I pray that you would continue to smile on us and show us how to love as best as possible. We love you, and it's in your name we pray. Amen.